Moving from the electrical signals we have seen so far, let us consider a few sound signals or acoustic signals. The phonocardiogram or the heart sound signal is also a very commonly used signal and popular because it can be easily sensed. The standard symbol and tool of a physician, a doctor, is the stethoscope, which always hangs around the neck of a physician. And that is used to listen to the sound, to the heart sounds. Now, there are also advanced sensors and instrumentation techniques available to record the vibration signal that includes not only the audible heart sound signals, but also the lower frequency vibration signals associated with the heart sounds. The PCG, or the phonocardiogram, is a vibration signal. It's a sound signal. A vibration could also include the lower frequency sounds that are not audible, or low frequency vibrations then. It's also related to the derivative of displacement and pressure. This is related to the contractile activity of the heart, and we have already seen the cardiovascular system. The vibration signal represents the vibration of the entire, what is called the cardiohemic system, including the heart and the blood. Recording of the PCG requires a transducer to convert the vibrational sound signal to an electrical signal so we can process the signal. And that is typically done using contact microphones, pressure transducers, or accelerometers. There are piezoelectric crystals that are very sensitive and can record the signal down to 1 or 2 hertz. Cardiovascular diseases and defects cause changes in the heart sounds and can also cause additional sounds and murmurs, and these are very useful in diagnosis of cardiovascular diseases. So let's look at a few details related to the heart sound. We will have some exercises related to heart sounds, and we will see the analysis of heart sound signals in detail through chapters 4, 5, and 6. The heart sound signal has many interesting characteristics, as you will see in the examples. There were some theories proposed earlier in the 1960s and 50s where it was said that the heart sounds are caused by the opening and closing of the valves in the heart, the aortic valve, the pulmonary valve, the mitral valve, and the tricuspid valve. It was thought that the valves themselves cause the sound because they move, open and close. But later on it was indicated that this would not be a good model, but instead it was said that the opening and closing of the valves cause changes in the movement of blood, cause acceleration and deceleration of the blood, and ejection of blood out of the heart. And it is this change, or such change in the movement of blood, that causes the sounds, that creates a vibration and that triggers vibration of the entire heart, including the blood and the vessels connected to the heart. So the whole system vibrates. You cannot say it's just the valve that is opening and closing and causing the sounds, but in opening and closing, the valves create change in the movement of blood, and such change will cause the whole heart to vibrate. So that is the current theory proposed mainly by Rushmore and others, and nowadays that is accepted. And these are caused by the changes in the pressure and the movement of blood. However, secondary sources on the chest surface have been identified, and these are the well-known auscultatory areas where the sounds related to the opening and closure of these valves can be heard best. It's not that you hear only the sound related to the mitral valve in the mitral area, but you hear best the sounds related to the opening and closure of the mitral valve in that area. And yesterday I showed you the figure where these areas are marked. A normal cardiac cycle has two major sounds. The first sound S1, the second sound S2. And in English, these sounds are called labda. In other languages, they may be called something else. In English, they typically say the heart goes labda. In Indian languages, we say something else. We say tharapara, tharapara. That's like a train. So depending upon your native language, you may use different words or sounds to describe the way the heart sounds. Regardless, the first heart sound occurs at the onset of ventricular contraction, which is at the same time as the QRS complex in the ECG. So the QRS can be used as a marker to identify when the first heart sound begins. So here is a recording from a normal adult. The QRST of the ECG recorded simultaneously with the heart sound. S1 is exactly at that time instant and has a set of vibrations about 200 milliseconds, 100 milliseconds, a little less than 200 milliseconds, maybe 100 to 120 milliseconds. So this is a good indicator as to where the first heart sound starts. A normal heart sound signal has one set of vibrations corresponding to ventricular systole, and another set known as the second heart sound, or S2, at the end of ventricular systole, which is the beginning of diastole. So sometimes you may see S2 referred to as a diastolic sound, but really it is the end of systole. It's hard to say when systole ends and diastole begins, but this marks the end of contraction, the second sound. This is the carotid pulse signal, but we will come to that later on. There are several vibrations that occur within S1. The initial vibrations are the first myocardial contractions in the ventricles. As the blood moves toward the atrium, when the ventricles contract, the blood will go from the bottom up towards the atrium. But of course, that's not where the blood will be ejected. But as the blood goes up towards the atrium, the atrioventricular valves are closed, so the blood doesn't go back to the atria. But this movement of blood upward will cause the atrioventricular valves to close, the mitral and tricuspid valves. So that relates, that gives rise to a certain set of vibrations. The second component of S1 is related to the tension of the closed AV valves, and that decelerates the blood a little bit, because the atrioventricular valves will close. And now we have a closed chamber. Remember that just before ventricular contraction, the atria contracted, squeezed, and the blood came down to the ventricles. And when the ventricles begin to contract, the atrioventricular valves are still open. They need to close, but the closure is caused by the movement of blood upward. As the blood moves up, the atrioventricular valves are closed. The second component is related to tension of the closed valves, and that will cause a little bit of deceleration of the blood that was moving up, so the movement is stopped to a certain extent. Next, there is a short gap there, which is known as isovolumic contraction. All the valves are closed. The valves between the atria and the ventricles close at this point. The aortic and pulmonary valves have not yet opened. To open the aortic valve, you need more pressure in the ventricles crossing the systemic blood pressure across the other side of the valve. Next, the semilunar valves, which are the aortic on the left side and the pulmonary on the right side, those valves open. When those valves open, it indicates that the pressure inside the ventricular chamber is greater than the pressure on the other side of the valve. So when the ventricles squeeze and reach the required pressure, the aortic and pulmonary valves open and the blood is ejected out of the ventricles. So there is a rapid movement of the blood going out of the ventricles. This causes the third component of S1. And this is related to oscillation of the blood between the root of the aorta and the ventricular valves, because there is a rapid ejection of a bolus of blood. And then, as the blood flows out, the fourth component of S1, that's related to vibrations caused by turbulence near the valve. through the ascending aorta and the pulmonary artery. Just outside the aortic valve, the aorta curves, and at that point, when the bolus of blood hits the vessel, there is vibration of the vessel, the aorta, and on the right side, the pulmonary artery. So these are the components and the activities, the corresponding activities in the heart. We need to understand the activities that go on in the heart and the related components in the signals, so that when we observe a change in the nature of the signal, we know what the corresponding cause is, or could possibly be. So this is a very interesting and very good illustration of the heart sounds from the book by Rushmore. The first heart sound is shown here in these components, but this is just the sound lung, the first heart sound. And that's only about 100 milliseconds. And it's difficult for untrained ears to distinguish the components within such a short sound. However, a trained cardiologist is able to recognize these components. And these are related schematically shown here. This is only the left ventricle. When the left ventricle contracts, it pushes the mitral valve leaflets up and they seal. And when they seal and the ventricle contracts, there is isovolumic contraction and there is some vibration here. After that, the aortic valve opens and the blood is ejected out. That is the third component. And after the blood is ejected, the aorta could vibrate a bit. And that is the fourth component. So these are the components, and there are the corresponding components on the right side that are shown here. Similar activities happen in the right ventricle. Now the second heart sound has completely different events that cause the components. At the end of ventricular contraction, the ventricles are squeezed, the blood has been ejected, and then the contraction ends, and at the end of the contraction, when the pressure within the left ventricle when the pressure here becomes less than the pressure on the other side of the aortic valve will close. When the aortic valve closes, that finishes the ejection of blood, that terminates systole. So when the aortic valve closes, the movement of blood, which was going out now, is suddenly stopped. So there is the associated vibration around this part. And similarly, on the right-hand side, in the right ventricle, the pulmonary valve closes, and that creates another set of vibrations. So these lead to the second heart sound. So the second heart sound is at the end of ventricular systole, which is also the beginning of the relaxation part, the diastole. So there are two parts to the second heart sound, one due to the closure of the aortic valve, that is called A2, and another due to closure of the pulmonary valve on the right side, that is called P2. Normally they are together because the right and left parts operate in synchrony, but there are some pathological conditions, such as bundle branch block, when the right part and the left part may not contract together, and then the two components, A2 and P2, will be separated. There could be additional sounds, the third heart sound, which is not normally heard, when the atria contract and blood comes from the atria to the ventricles. But these are very low frequency sounds and not commonly heard, unless you record with highly sensitive microphones. So these are some points regarding the genesis of the heart sound signals. So just to repeat what I said, following systole in a normal cardiac cycle, the second sound S2 is caused by the closure of the semilunar valves, the aortic and pulmonary valves. The primary vibrations occur in the arteries due to deceleration now. Previously it was acceleration of blood, now it is deceleration. The ventricles and atria also vibrate due to transmission of vibrations through the blood valves and the valve rings. the whole system vibrates regardless of where the stimulus is coming from or where the primary activity lies. So S2 has two components, the aortic valve component called the A2 and the pulmonary valve component called P2. The aortic valve normally closes before the pulmonary valve. So A2 first and then P2. Just a few milliseconds. Normally you don't see them separate. Pathological conditions could cause this gap to widen and may also reverse and make the aortic component come after the pulmonary component. So you may get P2, A2 instead of A2. So the A2, P2 is also widened during inspiration. But if you record the signal during expiration, when the subject is exhaling, then if the gap persists, it means there could be something wrong. So you have to recognize the phase of respiration. Typically, heart sounds are recorded by asking the subject to hold breathing. Take a deep breath, stop breathing for a few seconds, and record the heart sound so that you don't get the lung sounds and the breathing sounds. But if you want to study the A2, P2 gap, if it persists or not, then you will record the signal during inspiration and expiration. There are a few other sounds. S3, the sudden termination of the rapid filling phase of the ventricles when the blood comes from the atria to the ventricles. S4, atrial contractions displacing blood. And there could be some valvular clicks and snaps. If the valve is stenosed, it could make some sound when opening and closing. And there could be murmurs due to certain cardiovascular defects. And murmurs are perhaps the most important components of heart sounds that are useful in the diagnosis of valvular defects and other problems. So let's look at heart murmurs in some detail. Normally, the gap between the first sound and the second sound, that is S1 to S2, and from S2 to the next S1, that is diastole, those gaps are normally silent. There is nothing, there's no sound. However, there could be murmurs that are caused by cardiovascular defects and diseases. Murmurs are high-frequency sounds. The normal heart sounds, S1 and S2, typically have energy limited to about 150 hertz. The first sound has dominant frequencies around 40 to 60, 70 hertz. The second sound has components that are a little more, up to about 120, 150 hertz. But murmurs could be of much higher frequency content, up to 500 or 1,000 hertz. And they arise when the velocity of blood becomes high as it flows through an irregularity, or a baffle, or a constriction. And there are some diseases that cause this problem. Conditions that cause turbulence in blood flow within the heart are valvular stenosis and insufficiency. So these are two conditions that we need to recognize. One is stenosis. A valve is said to be stenosed when there is deposition of calcium or cholesterol and other products associated with valvular degeneration on the valve leaflets. So a stenosed valve becomes stiff and it cannot open completely. The aortic valve has to open completely to allow blood to be ejected out of the ventricles when the ventricles contract. So instead of opening completely and allowing blood to pass through, if the aortic valve is stenosed and is stiff, the leaflets may not open completely and instead may open from the closed state only so much. So instead of a full opening, there will be a narrow opening. And when blood is ejected through this narrow opening, there is turbulence caused. Turbulence leads to high frequency sounds, known as murmurs. And the same thing could happen when, for example, the mitral valve is stenosed. The mitral valve is between the left atrium and the left ventricle. When the atria contract, the blood is supposed to go from the atria to the ventricle, from the left atrium to the left ventricle. The mitral valve then is supposed to be completely open. If it is tenuous, it will not open completely and will cause a baffle in the movement of blood from the left atrium to the left ventricle. The pressure gradient is not high, but still it could cause murmurs because blood has to pass through this baffle. So obstruction in the path of blood, whether it is due to a stenosis wall, valve, or something else, such as deposition of cholesterol and calcium, these could cause additional sounds, high-frequency sounds that are known as murmurs. On the other hand, valvular insufficiency leads to what is called regurgitation or backward flow of blood. A valve is said to be insufficient when it cannot remain closed, when it is supposed to be closed. So, let's consider the left ventricle again. Between the left atrium and the left ventricle, we have the mitral valve. During contraction or systole, the mitral valve is supposed to be closed completely because the blood has to go out through the aortic valve. But if the mitral valve cannot remain shut under the high pressure of contraction of the ventricles, and if it opens up a little bit, there is blood that leaks back into the left atrium. It's not supposed to go there, the blood is supposed to go out through the aorta. So this backward leakage from the ventricle to the aorta, to the atrium, is called regurgitation. And because it is typically through a narrow opening, the valve is supposed to be shut, but it cannot remain completely shut, so it opens a little bit, and through a narrow hole, the blood goes back to the atrium, and that regurgitation through a narrow hole causes high-frequency sound. So that is due to valvular insufficiency, when the valve leaflets have become weak. So reverse leakage or regurgitation through a narrow opening is another cause. There are four valves, the aortic and pulmonary, and then the mitral and the tricuspid valves. There are four valves in the heart. And each one could become stenosed or insufficient. So there are eight conditions now as to forming a baffle during ejection or movement of blood through, or forming leakage or regurgitation. So they could be aortic stenosis or regurgitation, mitral stenosis or regurgitation. And on the other side, pulmonary stenosis or regurgitation, and tricuspid stenosis or insufficiency. So there are eight conditions related to valves that cause either ejection sound or leakage. In addition, there are possibilities of septal defects. The septum is the wall that separates the left part from the right part. And the pressure in the left ventricle, left is here, so the left ventricle is higher than the right ventricle. The wall between the left and right ventricles has to withstand this pressure. If there is a hole in the wall, it is known as ventricular septal defect. When the ventricles contract, the left ventricle contracts and the right also contracts at the same time, but the pressure inside is different. The left is at a higher pressure than the right, and there could be blood going from the left to the right across the wall or the septum. In the left ventricle, you have oxygenated pure blood. In the right ventricle, you have the impure blood. So the mixing of the pure blood back into the impure blood and being sent back to the lungs is a waste. So that leads to reduced amount of oxygenated blood going on from the left ventricle to the rest of the system. Similarly, there could be atrial septal defect. That causes murmur too, but that will be during contraction of the atria or ventricular diastole. So depending upon the defect, there could be a murmur either during systole or in diastole. The frequency content of the murmur will depend upon the nature of this obstacle or the hole. How big is the hole? What is the pressure gradient across this obstacle or the hole? So systolic murmurs are caused by ventricular septal defect, a hole in the wall between the left ventricle and the right ventricle. aortic stenosis, pulmonary stenosis, mitral insufficiency, tricuspid insufficiency. All of these will give systolic murmur. And semilunar valvular stenosis, ASNPS, they cause obstruction in the path of the blood being ejected during systolic. Atrial ventricular insufficiency, and they cause regurgitation of the blood. So these are all systolic murmurs. Diastolic murmurs are caused by aortic or pulmonary insufficiency on the other side, and mitral or tricuspid stenosis and atrial septal defect. So these are some of the causes of systolic and diastolic murmurs. The features of the heart sounds and murmurs that would be of interest are the intensity, frequency, content, and timing. As I said, the A2 and P2 components, the time difference between them is important. And if P2 comes before A2, then that is also abnormal. And these are affected by physical and physiological factors such as recording site on the thorax, where you put your microphone, the intervening thoracic structures. The heart is inside, and in between the heart and your microphone, you will have the rib cage, skin, fat, maybe some part of the lung. Left ventricular contractility, the contraction properties of the ventricles. If they're affected by myocardial ischemia and infarction, the sound quality will change. Position of the cardiac valves at the onset of systole, the degree of the defect present. When you say stenosis, there are different degrees. Is the valve open 100% or 90% or 80% or only 20%? That determines the degree of the defect and the frequency content of the associated murmur. The heart rate and blood velocity also affect the frequency content. A few points. S1 is loud and delayed in mitral stenosis. Right bundle branch causes wide splitting of S2 because the right ventricle will contract much later than the left ventricle. So P2, pulmonary component, will come late. Left bundle branch causes reverse splitting. If the left ventricle contracts late, then A2 will come late and may come after P2. Acute myocardial infarction causes a pathological S3. The third heart sound is not normally heard, but if it is strong, then it would be an indication of myocardial infarction. Severe mitral regurgitation leads to increased S4. That is not normally heard. Now, murmurs are like noise. They don't have any particular wave shape. They don't have any particular frequency, but they are of relatively high frequency as compared to the normal heart sounds. But there are some important characteristics that have been observed and documented clinically. Aortic stenosis causes a diamond-shaped mid-systolic murmur. During systole, when blood is ejected out from the left ventricle through the aorta, if the aortic valve is stenosed, the pressure gradient changes in such a manner that the murmur will increase and then decrease. So that gives an envelope that is called a diamond-shaped murmur. Mitral stenosis causes the decreasing progression to a type of diastolic, presystolic murmur. So here, there is a first murmur of large amplitude. It decreases and then increases again. It's opposite of the diamond shape. And this starts in diastole and goes until just before the next systole. So depending upon where the murmur comes and what is the frequency content and what is the general energy pattern, the envelope of the murmur, it is possible to indicate what is the potential cause. Recording of the heart sound signal requires special transducers. There are microphones, there are condenser microphones that have been designed specifically for heart sounds. But piezoelectric contact sensors are more accurate and can go down to very low frequencies because they sense not only the audible frequency, but also the subaudible vibration signals. These electric contact sensors are sensitive to displacement and pressure or acceleration, and these are all related by derivatives. So the second derivative of displacement is related to vibration. In some of my early work for my PhD, we used the HP21050 transducer, which has a bandwidth of 0.05 to about 1,000 hertz. So it clearly goes way down into the subaudible range. ECG recording is normally performed in a quiet room. The patient is in a supine position, head resting on a pillow. The transducer is placed firmly at the desired position using a suction cup or using straps. If you just place the microphone, it may not be adequate because it will move.